Should we talk now?
Talk.
Should we? Are you sure?
Hey, that was a loud pop, wasn't it?
It was a loud pop. Well, I'm glad you turned the rack on before the show started.
So am I. Well, I turned it off because I was like, oh, we'll be gone for an hour eating crappy chicken.
Well, at least we didn't get through the first, you know, half of the show and then figured it out.
Yeah. So.
Well, are we actually recording, Phil?
Yes.
Okay, wow. We got
the light is green.
We got it covered then. Well, welcome to the doghouse on ntnradio.com.
Maybe.
Welcome. Welcome, guys.
Hello, everybody.
Thank
Hello,
you.
There he is waiting for that.
It's not a Thank show you. Until Warren says hello.
That's right.
Hey, everybody.
Thank God we have our own Gomer Pyle, huh?
I know. What would we do without him?
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Go away.
Well, anyways, guys, so what's going on?
I had a great weekend, except for motorcycle racing. Other than that, I had a great weekend.
Yeah, you fled the state.
With the cops in hot pursuit. That was last week.
Oh, that was since we did the show, right?
Yes. Oh, I've had a busy week. So Wednesday, I got up, drove up to New York, took care of some stuff, drove back with hard rolls. Because I had to eat.
Phil's the only person I know who drives 500 miles to go pick up...
For breakfast.
Yeah, for biscuits.
For breakfast, basically.
Yes. I do want to say a couple things. One, I think I'm going to have to do a, if you want to drive in New York, video to put out as like a lesson for people that aren't from New York for driving through city traffic and stuff.
Item number one, buy a tank.
Item number two, don't do it. Go back to wherever you're from.
Yeah.
Hire a cab. Pay somebody else. You know, I think...
Megabus.
Right. I think I could... you know how they have people that charge to drive you over the Bay Bridge? I think I could have people, I could charge people to drive their car over the Cross Bronx.
What, do you know what that pays, by the way?
I think it's like $25 a trip.
Really?
That ain't cheap.
I'd do that.
Oh, yeah, in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Do they have people that do that, like over the GW Bridge?
No, the GW Bridge is short. Bay Bridge, because it's so long, it scares people. I'll tell you what, I was on the
It's the height. I think it scares people, right?
It's height and length. I was on the GW Bridge, and it was shit.
I thought it was girth.
Girth, yeah, girth. Wreck a sidewall. The GW Bridge was shaking, but people just they don't understand the proper way to merge or cut
people
off. Well,
some people
and like they make eye contact. Don't you dare make eye contact with me. I'll hit you. I have insurance. That's what it's for.
It's if you haven't been on the GW Bridge, the GW Bridge is multiple decks, right?
Only two.
Well, that's multiple.
That is multiple.
Okay, and so you're on the bottom deck on there. Some people get very claustrophobic in there, you know.
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, the GW Bridge isn't as bad as driving across the Cross Bronx with the buildings falling down on you.
That's true.
You know, and people get scared about that, and then that causes the backup to the GW Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, it's only a chunk of an apartment building. You'll probably live.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
And they got plenty
Make
left.
Sure you pull off to the side so the rest of the cars can get around you.
Well, they'll just hit you and push you out of the way. That's not the big deal. Mm-hmm. But 8 million people a day drive under those crumbling buildings. The odds that it's going to fall on you is slim to none. Unless you stop there because you're panicking and wait there for 10 minutes.
It's no different than driving on the Pacific Coast Highway.
Right.
It's no different. A boulder could come down and kill you at any time, but the chances that it's actually going to hit you are pretty slim.
That's right. So I did that. I forgot all about that doing that. And then I came back and I lit some fires and I left.
Lit the fires and kicked the tires.
Because Phil is an arson.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I burned piles of brush in my front yard. And so long as the flame was under 25 feet high, I felt it was safe to leave for the weekend.
Did you roast weenies?
No. Okay. I put extra padding around my weenies so it wouldn't get burned.
Okay, good.
I went into D.C. where I... chauffeured my niece around all weekend.
Phil's a good uncle.
I'm a good uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And she repaid me by saying, I have a sleepover party to go to on Saturday night. So I like dropped her off at 8 o'clock Saturday morning to this birthday party sleepover thing. And then I didn't pick her up till like noontime the next day. So I literally could have stayed home, I think.
Yeah, she that's not much
It was
babysitting.
Close enough to walk. I was like, you could have walked. But the dog. I had to take care of the dog.
Yeah.
But Saturday night, I did get to watch my Northeastern University Huskies win the hockey
championship. Thank God we're getting this out of the way early in the show.
I had to say that. I'm so proud. First time since 1988.
So, Ken, what'd you do this weekend?
I cheered for the Northeastern
Huskies. Warren's done for the show.
I cheered for the Northeastern Huskies.
That's how Ken gets to keep his mic.
That's right.
but then I watched Supercross and MotoGP and got really confused, aggravated through stuff.
Yeah, it was a very interesting race weekend. Both races were pretty dang good. Right. And
both were interesting.
And I finally did since we did the show last week. I actually went back and watched Super Sport from
that was a good race.
That was
2 weeks ago.
That was a really good race, but kind of heartbreaking to watch.
It was heartbreaking as hell last couple laps.
So anyway, Warren, did you herd sheep this weekend?
No, I didn't.
Did you sleep with them?
Didn't do that either. I went to Richmond to visit a family friend whose daughter I consider a niece. She considers me as an uncle. She's getting shipped out to the Middle East tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah. And then...
shipping out to the Middle
East... Well, she's going to go to Kuwait. That's their staging area. And then she's in the Signal Corps, so they'll farm her out. She could end up in Iraq or Afghanistan or half a dozen places over there.
I thought we were getting out of Iraq.
Oh, no.
No, we sent 10,000 troops there.
Well, no.
No.
We're up to 5,000 now.
Oh, all right.
I know this because I keep an eye on it because I got friends that end up over there.
But Phil's favorite president said we were ending the war in Iraq. We were getting
over
out.
The last,
we already won that. We're over, going back and having three.
Over the last 6 months, we have went from about 2,000 to about 5,000.
That doesn't sound like victory to me.
Hey, just saying. Okay. We got more over there now than we'd had this in quite a while.
That's okay. That's okay. We beat Germany, and we still have, 50,000 men over there?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So we went down there and had a little bon voyage party for her and had a good time.
That's cool.
In Richmond?
Well, as much fun as you can. Well, it's Chesterfield, actually.
Oh, Chesterfield is pretty good. That's the home of Denny Hamlin.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And there's a restaurant right up the road in Chester, which is right down the road from Chesterfield, called what's that barbecue place in there? Oh, it's so good.
Are you asking us?
Yeah, I can't.
Pig Lips.
I want to say it's Sibley's Barbecue.
Never heard of
Actually,
it.
Actually, I haven't been there, but I have seen it. I couldn't tell you where it is.
It's
but
a little red building
I drove
on the
by.
Side,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The barbecue in there is phenomenal.
I'll have to check that out.
Mm. I'm fat. I know these things.
Yeah. Phil's got tattooed on his heart the location of all the best eateries, right?
And there's also a list of artery veins to grab first when my heart transplants.
I want to keep this particular artery because I want to suck all the fat out of it because it was so good.
Yeah. Save that bad boy.
Phil, so before you could have heart surgery, would they have to render you down a little bit?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So,
what'd you do this weekend, Ken?
I didn't really do anything too interesting. I had an actual opportunity to go out and ride this weekend, but the weather was kind of cruddy.
It was.
Yeah,
it was kind of cruddy, and I'm pretty much helmetless now. And since when we sold off a lot of the stuff we had in the shop there, Ken wasn't bright enough to actually snag a helmet before he sold it.
You really do need to go out and get
you
one.
You do that.
Yeah.
You need to go out and get one, just because eventually
I have no choice because my helmet that I have is literally not wearable anymore. I can spin it around on my head.
Right that would now. Be fun to watch.
It's not so fun when you're riding, though.
That would be a good YouTube video.
Not so
fun.
Yeah,
bring it in. We'll do
bring it in.
Bring YouTube. It in. And next week, we'll do a YouTube video and put it up on Facebook so everyone can see a helmet spin on Ken's head.
Yeah, because we did so well on YouTube. I think we should do more.
Because we did the wrong thing.
Right.
Watched a YouTube video on five different ways to tie your shoes.
We'd be much better if when we were going to get dinner before the show, which we normally do.
We had a camera in the truck.
We had a camera in the truck, and we were doing...
We went at the dinner table.
And we were doing, Bohemian Rhapsody. We were lip-syncing.
No, I said a lot of racial slurs.
Because apparently lip-syncing to Queen songs is a guaranteed million hits.
Every time.
Every time.
And I said a lot of racial slurs during dinner, so we probably shouldn't do that. Yeah. Don't think the waitress...
That's what the beep button's for.
He did it right in front of the waitress, too.
Don't care.
and he insulted... Everyone, don't they take it personally? Any particular person?
In about 30 seconds, he did.
Yeah,
you got to be good at something.
I've never heard anybody say the F word in front of a stranger so many times in 30 seconds.
Well, I did tell her he was from New York, and she said, "Okay."
Yeah,
Sorry.
That is true.
She shouldn't have effing been there, though.
That is true. All right, we'll be back on the other side of this break.
Hey everyone, we're going to talk about EBR again.
Why?
It's the monster that won't die, because this time it's actually back to life completely. EBR, beginning just last week on the 17th, has restarted production of the 1190 RX and the 1190 SX model.
Good. Do they have anywhere to sell?
Well, that's one of the problems. They don't have a dealership market, but you can email them and talk to them and actually get one built for you, I guess.
Well, how would you...
I know a guy that sets up dealer markets for Motus.
I'm sure he can help you. How do you possibly sell that to a dealer at this point?
It's going to be difficult.
Because there are dealers that are still sitting on old EBR inventory.
Yeah, I got a comment about that in a few minutes.
Right.
I know a dealer that would buy in. And he's about 30 miles from here.
Yeah, you're probably right.
That idiot will buy in.
Right, right. But it's very, very difficult. That's very difficult because it's like, well, how long are you going to be around? You know, how long are you going to be around this time?
Who knows? But EBR actually folded last April. So it's been almost a year. They've been technically out of business. And if everyone remembers from several, and when I say several, I mean several times we've talked about it, a company called Liquid Asset Partners, which is big in... taking defunct motorcycle organizations, companies, and breaking them apart and selling their pieces.
Right.
Bought EBR, and we all thought they were going to do the same thing with EBR, but this time that didn't happen.
Well, we did a story where they said that the first thing they were going to do is they were going to look for another buyer who could give them...
Right.
They're still looking
for partners.
Right. And worst case, they'd start operating the business. So is Eric Buell involved?
Eric Buell is the CTO, and this new CEO is Steve Smith, who was the chief operations officer for EBR before.
They just swap positions, basically.
Eric Buell was the he was the CTO before. I don't think he was the CEO.
He was?
He was, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought he was the CEO.
I don't think he was the CEO. Well, the boss of Liquid Asset Partners, Bill Melvin, had stated this resurrection of EBR would not be possible without the EBR team. All the credit goes to them for waiting out the storms during the last year. Now that the clouds have cleared, EBR is able to shift into gear, knowing that it has financial stability, a profitable multi-year plan, and a 5 to 10 year vision. EBR is on solid ground and moving forward. We are turning the key and twisting the throttle.
How are they possibly on solid financial ground? We already know the guy that bought into the business basically bought it at fire sale prices.
Right.
Right. So is he...
That's always a good way.
Right. That's a good way to buy things, but if you don't have any money behind it...
Well, I think it's Liquid Asset Partners because they've been around for a very long time, so they have some pocket.
Not operating businesses, though.
No. Well, okay. It doesn't seem... Well, I can't say yes or no. It doesn't seem that way because everything you read about them is... They destroyed this company.
Yeah, I'm not going to make a prediction because it's going to sound like I'm poo-pooing the whole thing, but the problem is you have to sell a product, and two-thirds, probably more than that, probably nine-tenths of their employees have gone off to other jobs.
Well, right? that is exactly right. They had 120 employees at this time last year. As of the 17th, they got 12.
Yeah.
So if they do start selling bikes, they're going to hire some more people.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, you probably only need 12.
Yeah.
Because you don't have there's no market for your bike right now.
Yeah. Well, they've already produced two new ones, one of which was painted in a patriotic American flag scheme to emphasize the fact that they're built in the USA.
Well,
and they're going to auction that off for charity.
Okay. I don't like the term built. Assemble might be more appropriate.
Well, okay.
And you got all the parts sitting around and you're just assembling it because you can assemble a bike in an afternoon, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, if you're interested in getting one of these new bikes,
you can do it in a half hour.
No, assembly.
No more than an hour, though.
You can assemble even a complex Harley in about 4 hours if you have all the parts in hand.
Or a half hour on TV.
Or a half hour on TV.
No more than an hour.
No more than an hour.
Well, you have to have time.
You have commercial breaks.
To the amusement park or the golf course.
That is true.
Well, if you want to buy one of these new EBRs, if you want to spend the money for 1190 SX, it's going to cost you $13,000, and if you want the RX, it's going to cost you $14,000. So And if you the pricing is about the same as it was before.
If you want the bike,
and if you want
it's going to cost you a trip to reality.
And it, I was going to say, and if you want a warranty that's actually going to be useful, that's $38,000.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, speaking of warranty, because this is a technically a brand new company, any of you guys who have an EBR bike, the new company, EBR Motorcycles LLC, is under no obligation to honor warranties that were bikes
surprise
from the previous company.
That's right. Man, that's customer service.
Wait, how did they say that? Gomer Pyle say it? Surprise!
So, so when you go out and buy an EBR, you can be certain that in its next incarnation, your bike will not be serviced.
Yes.
There you go.
Makes sense.
That's a great selling
point. But you can
point.
Still get Buell service
that's
at Harley Davidson.
I'd rather have just to give me a Buell Blast that's sitting, you know, around somewhere. I know I'm gonna
have those are actually a lot of fun.
They're a lot of fun.
They're
a lot of fun, and if it breaks down, I just
kind of feel
it.
Like we're enablers. We keep talking about EBR and all this stuff.
Well, it's entertaining.
Well, it's a lot of fun.
It's entertaining.
It is, but I feel like we're enablers. Like, I have a feeling that Eric Buell listens to the doghouse and he's like, oh, man, they're talking to me. I'm going to go do something else. I'm going to sell the business. I'm going to start the business.
If Eric Buell had been listening to this show much in the last 6 months to a year, he wouldn't find much he liked.
Well, most people don't.
Yeah, that is true.
He'd be in a vast majority of people.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, I don't know what to say about this. I don't.
No, well, I admit we have not really said anything bad about EBR. They just
be honest with you, I love their bikes.
Yeah, they just didn't work out.
I love the technology. They're business savvy, not so much.
It just didn't work out for them. Well, now as I said, on the 17th is when they reintroduced the company. They brought out the first two new bikes. Two new old style whatever bikes. Well, the next day on the 18th, Liquid Asset Partners started doing what it does best, and it's selling off the machinery, tools, and parts that aren't needed for the new production.
Not needed. Not needed. We got enough spare parts laying around. We can build a bunch of bikes.
From
we don't 20 need
incarnations. Here's my question of the day.
Yeah.
What has been out of business more, EBR or Indian?
Oh, it has to be Indian because they've been around for so long.
It would have to be.
Only eight counts of Indian.
I don't even think it's eight. I don't think it's
seven,
eight.
Right? Seven?
Six,
how many
I think.
How many times has the stock market crashed?
I don't know, but I want to say six times.
Right, so we got to be on, what, five or six EBRs?
Well, this is the third Indian of my lifetime.
Yeah, but
so,
this right, is
but
the
that's, but that's
fourth the, EBR of the doghouse well, lifetime.
Indian didn't go belly up the first 40 years of its life. So, no. So it's most of the renditions of Indian have happened since the 50s, the flip over.
So 50s, so early 60s.
I want to say six times.
70.
I want to say six times it's been reinvented.
At least 70.
So how many times are we at EBR? Where the original EBR, where the Harley EBR.
It wasn't EBR. Okay. Right. The very first rendition of it was Buell Motorcycles.
Right. Okay. So there's Buell. Mm-hmm. There was the Harley Buell.
I think that was the first, by the way.
Okay. Was it? Yeah. I thought there was.
I thought it was separate. I thought he.
No, you're right because they brought Eric in just to do that.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Right.
So there was the Harley. Mm-hmm. There was that crashed and he bought it, and it was just.
Well,
was
I don't think
EBR.
He bought it. He just took it over.
He just took it over.
Harley
so
didn't care.
Two.
So I want to say this is the third time.
Then he sold it to India. India.
Well, that was the same one. That's the one that just closed.
Yes.
That's still not Harley, and that's not him.
No, after Harley went out, Hero came in to invest in.
But I thought he had it on his own for a while.
No.
We got to go back and check.
I don't
check
think
the
so.
Tape.
I don't think
and,
so.
And then now, I mean, they're close, but Indian, he's had as many fails, almost as many fails as Indian, who's been here for 100 years.
Yeah, I don't think that's...
I'm with you. I don't see how a dealer picks it up. I don't get it.
Well,
the
problem is that they kind of doubled down by saying, we're under no obligation to service bikes we built. So, I mean, how does that give you any kind of confidence that you won't be in the same situation a year from now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
not
a great marketing technique.
This article concluded with, a conglomeration of multiple articles. But the EBR motorcycle team wants to emphasize that EBR is also available for contract engineering of motorcycle or other high-tech products, including electrics.
meaning we need another way to make money because
right.
we have no dealer network.
And but they, you know, I will give them credit. They do have the experience in doing that because they've been doing it for Hero for a couple of years.
Well, they effectively built, they effectively designed and put into Hero the technology to build a sport bike.
Yeah.
That Hero didn't have.
So they have the background on doing that.
Yeah, they have the background on doing that if that's what you're in the market to do. And you and here's the reward for that. Hero pulled their financing and you failed.
Yep.
So maybe you can get somebody else to invest in your company that'll pull their financing too and you can fail again.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Indian, they've just come out with a new motorcycle.
Indian
Springfield.
Oh, okay. Well, we were talking Indian, like dot on their head Indian, not woo.
We were talking about the other Indian too.
It's kind of like what Harley does every now and then. You reproduce the same motorcycle, but you give it a new name and you add some different colors.
I will say Indian has been tearing up the drag strips. I don't know if you guys watch
I think
any,
I have seen some of that.
Have you watched any pro NHRA, but there's a chick on an Indian that's doing really well. So anyways, go on.
Well, the new Indian Springfield is named after original motor.
Rick Springfield?
No.
Jesse's girl? Oh, I would totally buy one of the. Listen, you will be my hero and we will repost a picture of your bike. If you buy the Indian Springfield and either call it Jesse's girl or son of a preacher man. Either Dusty Springfield or Rick Springfield. That's the bottom line. You heard it here first.
Oh, I don't know how to top that.
You know, I don't know. But you could go
I'm just going to drive
We could go back to talking about Northeastern or something.
No, you want me to sing I will sing the fight song during the next
Please,
break.
Warren, where were you?
Oh, I forgot. Oh, new Indian motorcycle called the Springfield, named after where the Indian motorcycles originally started, Springfield, Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Massachusetts. Phil knows something about it. He's probably actually been to the factory.
I've never been to the Indian factory. It was closed long before my age.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm from Massachusetts, and I've never been to Springfield, Massachusetts.
I've been to Springfield.
I haven't, and I have no desire to go there.
That's actually
that's
pretty
the capital. It's the capital of socialism, right?
It pretty much is. It's one of the four capitals of socialism in the United States.
Right.
Well, the other one we go to all the time.
That's right.
It has a Thunderstroke 111 engine, so it's got the standard Indian engine.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the vintage Chief, it has the classic windshield that you can put on or take off so you can go, you know, with the protect yourself from the wind or ride, you know, bar hop without it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a big bike. It's 736 pounds wet with a 5.5 gallon tank.
Keep it dry.
Cruise control, in dash informational display system, ABS. It's got tire pressure monitors standard, which kind of surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
Saddlebags with remote lock, 46-inch telescoping fork.
Remote, I love that. A remote lock on
your saddlebags.
On a saddlebags and motorcycle, because you can't get any lazier.
You know? You know, I can just see it. This guy hits his pocket, his bag pops open, people take it, you know. It's
Yeah.
I'd like to, you know, hit it, open it up, a bunch of, you know, spring snakes jump out
there
of it.
There you go.
Yeah, I would totally sell somebody.
God, I keep saying, there's always something entertaining and what's coming out in the marketplace all the time. Remote saddlebag locks. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, but this bike, when I first saw it, I mistook. I actually had to say, if it wasn't for the valanced front wheel cover,
mm-hmm.
front fender,
mm-hmm.
I would have thought it was a Harley Road King.
It does look very much like
it,
a Road
King. Yeah, it looked very much like it. It comes in two colors, Indian Red or Thunder Black.
Orange. Oh, I thought it was going to come in orange or black.
Thunder Black. Or their Indian Red, which I never really have cared for that new Indian Red. It looks a little too dull to me.
Mm.
I like some.
It's a traditional color.
It's a traditional color.
It is.
You know, if you had like a 1920s Indian in that color, you'd be the man riding around or pushing it. Sorry, allegedly.
Well, it overall looks like it's going to be a nice bike. It's going to compete against the Harley Road King. You know, so it's there. You guys go out and look at it.
Price-wise, how does it compare to a Road King?
That's what I'm getting. And it's just at the same basic price point as Road King, $20,900. So Road King runs from 19 to 21, depending on your dealership.
Yeah, Road King runs 19 to 21 plus the $8,000 that it takes to get out of the showroom. And
if you want to spend the money, you don't have to.
And then there's
there's just no parts for the Indians yet.
Yeah,
no, there probably is
$8,000 of chrome. Yeah,
I mean, the thing about it is that's What they don't tell you when you go out to buy a Harley, but I know you know now, okay, is that there's all kinds of things that you absolutely have to buy before
you get out the door. You cannot drive that thing with boots that don't have a Harley logo.
You obviously want the extended warranty, right?
You definitely need the extended
warranty. I'm sure Indian offers that as well.
And don't forget, you need chrome in your grips.
Yeah.
The factory grips, they just don't cut it.
We already have this basic package we put together with the most popular things.
Yeah,
right?
And it's only $8,000. And we can, because you're buying it at the dealership at the time, we can include it in your financing. So really, it doesn't cost you anything.
And you get your reward points,
right?
Too.
And it, you know, if you buy it today, we'll do it as part of the prep on your bike, so you don't have to pay the labor. And if you come back in 2 weeks to have this chrome piece,
because
put
you're going to find out, my God, I need that.
You're going to pay.
You're going to go to bike night, and people are going to be like, "What happened? Did they forget to put that chrome on?"
It's only going to add. It's only going to add $18 a month to your payments
right,
on the bike.
But
come on,
it adds so much more enjoyment to your bike.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and we have found out that chrome can get you home.
That is what Warren tells us.
That is that we have heard.
If you
that.
Have the chrome calipers, the chrome master cylinders.
Right.
But we're going to go out to break just a little bit early. I got a kind of a long story next on the original Iron Butt Rider. And after that, we're going to go to racing because there's a lot of racing to talk about tonight.
There is a lot of racing.
A lot to talk about. Not that didn't do so well in the pool for Phil or me.
Or maybe really.
No, better for you.
Better for me, but better for not as good as I
Nobody
hoped.
Nobody did really good in the pool.
Nobody?
Nobody.
So it's just a matter of how bad we did.
It's how bad you did this week, not whether or not you did bad.
All right, we'll be right back. All right, I told you we'd be right back. Those 3 seconds you were gone, I'm sure you missed all of us terribly.
16 seconds.
16 seconds. Well, whatever. Close enough. 3 × 4 × 7 + 3 − 1.
That's
modern 92. Modern core math. Common core math.
Modern core math.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to call it. All right, what are you talking about?
I'm going to talk about the Iron Butt Association. I'm sure you guys have heard of that before. It's that group that runs.
I've actually hosted a couple Iron Butt Association events.
Hey, your personal life, I don't want to know nothing about it.
I host the Tight Butt Association. Hey, baby girl.
Well, they reward people who do a lot of long distance but fast riding. So if you do 1,000 miles in 24 hours, you can become a member of the Iron Butt Association.
That's not really fast.
Well,
they're an endurance riding.
They're endurance riding. And they have a variety of different types. So you got four corners. You drive to the four corners of the continental U.S. within a certain amount of time. That qualifies you for a different level.
Mm-hmm.
But at one point, someone started doing some history research and found out that there was an original Iron Butt rider. And the Iron Butt Association liked it so much that they're going to create two new rides or have created two new rides to honor this guy. And it happens, the first Iron Butt ride was from San Francisco to New York City in 1903. And
19 minutes, 3 seconds?
That's the year 1903.
Oh, I was going to say probably more like 19 months at that time, right?
He had to kill a couple dinosaurs and liquefy them to burn. Get
there. Well, when I read the article about him, I had to go, where was he getting the gas? So that may be exactly what he did. You hunted the dinosaurs and melted them down for the gasoline.
There certainly weren't a lot of gas stations along the way.
No.
Not that time.
So in 1903, no one had ever traveled across the country in a motorized vehicle. And George Wyman decided he was going to be the very first person to drive across the United States on a motorized vehicle, in this case, a motorcycle. If you want to really call it a motorcycle, because back then, you know, Harleys were just coming out, but basically all of the motorcycles.
That's right. We didn't have motorcycles before there were Harleys, Ken.
It's
not like Daimler had a motorcycles 20 years before that.
Well, they're made out of wood. They're made out of wood. They don't count.
It's not like Indian didn't sell their first motorcycle the year before Harley even came
Okay.
Right. That didn't happen.
That doesn't matter. Right.
Motorcycles
You're getting it. It doesn't matter. It's only 1903 that counts.
That's right.
And even then, when you bought a Harley Davidson, it only cost $1,500. $7,000 worth of chrome.
Yeah. Well, bikes back then were nothing more than bicycles with a little engine on it and a little tank. And so this is what this guy was going to ride across the country from San Francisco to New York. It was a bicycle, still had his pedals on it, looked exactly like a bicycle with a engine mounted in a frame and a tank sitting behind the seat. Pretty big tank, but still just a tank. He was 26 years old, and he was a racing champion cycler and he had circumnavigated Australia on a bike as well. So he had
a bicycle or
bicycle.
Motorcycle.
Bicycle.
In a bicycle.
Okay.
So he had some chops on for long distance riding, you know, circumnavigating Australia.
Yeah, but Australia's flat, and it's always warm.
Well, it's on the coast too.
It's a lot of miles with the.
It's a lot of miles.
Bicycle seats are not the most comfortable things,
especially
out
back
there.
Then.
Right.
And he came to the.
But he probably had a kangaroo to tow him.
Or koala bear to keep him warm at night.
Hey.
So the summer before, he became the first person to cross the Sierra Nevadas on a motorcycle. So he'd been come to the U.S., got familiar with it, saw what the mountains were like. So on May 16th, 1903, with a promise from Motorcycle Magazine to publish an account of the journey, he took off from San Francisco. 50 days later, he rolled into New York City.
Wait a minute. 1903.
Where did he run into?
From San Francisco to New York City.
New York.
Yeah,
I know he has problems with English.
I thought he said Newark
City.
But
wait a minute.
I'm like, Jesus, I wouldn't even gotten there before the crime got there.
Okay, he was sponsored by Motorcyclist Magazine?
No, he had a promise from Motorcycle Magazine.
To cover it.
To cover his event.
Okay, what was the distribution in 1903 of Motorcycle Magazine?
Probably 15.
If that many in 1903.
Well, and I think there's probably quite a few people in the cities riding them around, because that was the only place you had any kind of pavement at all.
In 1903.
No, it would have been gas is the problem. Nobody ran on pavement. Jeez.
No, they had some paved roads. I mean, most major cities had paved roads.
I know that, but nobody like
cobblestone.
You got outside the city at all. Everything was sand, gravel, and mud.
Right,
and not much else. Which is why he mirrored his route from San Francisco east along railroad tracks, and he rode the vast majority of his trip on the railroad tracks. So it's not like he got on the roads.
You think that seat was hard? Try it going over railroad ties. Yeah.
So, you know, I can't even imagine riding that far, that many miles, with a rigid frame on railroad tracks.
I can understand the term iron butt now.
Iron butt, yeah. His route took him straight across the country through Nevada, Utah, Wyoming, across Nebraska, Iowa, and Illinois. From Chicago, he went to Buffalo, New York, then on to Albany, where he turned south and rode through the Hudson Valley to New York City, about 3,800 miles. So Mr. Wyman, he was definitely the iron butt, and I just can't imagine it. He had a few pictures. There's an article of his endeavors. He actually went off-road, off the tracks one time to try the roads, and his bike got stuck up, and you can see it sticking out of the mud, and he was just standing there, and there's some pics in this week's post of that.
So it looks like this motorcycle, and it's Motorcycle.
Right.
Magazine. It's called The Motorcycle. Was a British publication that started in 1903, went to 1945, and they had stuff sent in from Australia, South Africa, and apparently...
Well, you probably had to go out to all the continents to actually find anything to report on motorcycles.
Well, here's the surprising thing is I'm looking at a 1911 copy of the magazine I found online, and it's 72 pages.
That's 8 years later, right?
Yeah, I know, but I just those just things like, wow, that's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
So if you go to antique stores, you know, keep your eye out for a copy of this. It's probably worth a little bit.
By then, Harley Davidson has started, so.
Right, so they had stuff to write about.
Right.
Yeah, well, that was also right in the middle of the Indian Harley Wars with racing.
That's true.
Yeah, so that would probably be a lot of good print from that. Okay, well, back to the iron butt. You got to remember, they're the only paved roads are in most big cities. All the roads are mud, gravel, sand. And there were still people crossing the country in covered wagons back then. So it's not like there was a lot of anything up there.
This week, that still goes on. So
yeah,
when he has a couple quotes. One of them was when he crossed the Sierra, crossed Nevada desert on his 1 1/4 inch, 1 1/4 horsepower motorcycle. He said, "I would not ride a bicycle through Nevada again for $5,000." Well, that would be about $1 million today. So he wouldn't. He wouldn't cross Nevada for $1 million.
Hmm. I'm sure he would have. There's a. I won't do that for $1 million, and then sitting in front of you, $1 million.
Yeah, but you know what? $1 million in 1903 would be worth now. Well, 100 million.
Yeah, it was $5,000 so then, so it's only $1 million now.
Oh, give or take.
Right.
Inflation.
Oh, a nickname for a motorcycle magazine. The motorcycle was called the Blue Un, because the cover was blue in the first issue.
The Blue Un.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
This is pretty cool.
By the time he'd reached Albany, the mud, the sand, and the hundreds of miles of battering along the tracks had taken such a toll on the bike that the engine had finally stopped working. He couldn't fix it this time, so on July the 5th, he started pedaling up and down the hills of the Hudson Valley until he made it to New York City. So the last several hundred miles.
That's kind of cheating.
Well, he rode the bike. Literally, bike at that point.
Yeah, that's kind of cheating. It also kind of doesn't make sense that on my way from San Francisco, I'd ride like 100 miles north of New York City to come back down to it. Just bringing that up.
Well, probably had no choice because
that's where the railroad tracks went.
The railroad tracks going out of New York City across Pennsylvania into Ohio then.
That none of them went to the north through Buffalo? It had to.
They did, but it was
probably,
why would it be easier
riding than trying to cross the mountains.
Because coming
there's mountains up there.
Okay, because coming from Chicago, okay,
yeah,
is at that time it probably he had probably limits of where he could go. Right, coming from Chicago.
Yeah, but why would you go north at Cleveland? I would have gone south to Youngstown, Ohio.
Did he go north of Cleveland? It just said he went through Chicago.
Yeah, it would have to go to get to.
If you end up in Albany, you went north somewhere, and that would have been major city.
He was in Chicago.
Yes.
So couldn't he go east from Chicago to get to
Buffalo? He didn't say he was Robbie Madison where he rode across the
lake.
Great Lake.
Well, I mean,
you got to go
plural.
From Chicago, you got to go south below the
a little bit. Yeah, you have to go a little south.
Right,
that's
but
true.
You still have to go below Lake Erie, mm-hmm. which is where Cleveland is. So okay. At Cleveland, you can go south and go to New York City, or you know, which is almost due east, which along 80 there was train tracks out that way, or you go north up to Syracuse and Albany and come back around. I mean, that's literally it's like 90 miles from New York to Albany, or maybe a little bit more than that. So mm-hmm. you're talking,
I guess
talking
he
went
must,
200 and something miles out of the way.
He must have thought that the riding would be easier to go north up to Albany than
and
try
he
to cross,
did not do
cross
any
the Alleghenies.
He
well,
did
I don't
not
know.
Do
he may
research.
Not. He is,
there was no internet at the time.
Yeah, there was.
Google failed him.
Yeah, that's right.
The Encyclopedia Britannica didn't lay it out well enough for him.
Yeah, but I would tell him to get his money back. Get your money back on your GPS.
And the Farmer's Almanac just wasn't cutting it. So on July the 6th, 1903, he pulled into New York City. So in honor of Mr. Wyman, the Iron Butt Association has officially established the 2 George A. Wyman Memorial Challenge Rides meant to capture the spirit of his journey.
San Francisco to New York in 52 days? Not a problem.
On railroad tracks?
Might be a problem.
Gold Wing with air ride, you'd be all right. It's dodging the trains that's the problem.
Yeah.
For either ride to be certified by the Iron Butt Association, the trip must begin and end between May 16th and July 6th, the period that Wyman rode. One ride, the George A. Wyman Memorial Grand Tour, starts in San Francisco and ends at 1904 Broadway in New York City, where the New York Motorcycle Club was once located. In between, riders must visit an array of memorial projects that the IBA, the Iron Butt Association, is putting together called the Projects 160 Wyman's Waypoints, places where he mentions he stopped or had incidents during his journey. The other ride, if you want to choose to do it, does not need to recreate Wyman's exact route, only the rigors of his ride. To complete the George A. Wyman Memorial 50cc Gold Ride, the biker must make it from San Francisco to New York in 50 days, not in 50 days, but in 50 hours.
What? In 50 hours?
In 50 hours.
That's confident.
Wait a minute. Why is that reproducing the rigors of his ride since it took him 54 days?
Right, and when you get to Albany, you should have to, like, pull your bike with a pedal bike, right? I mean, that would be, or walk it, you know.
And
well, the second ride, again, remember, so it did not to recreate his exact route, only the rigor.
Well, the rigors is that he rode on railroad tracks and he did that for 2 months. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's the rigors, in my opinion.
Well, I don't.
50 hours, what does that prove?
That you have an iron butt.
Speed. Yeah, no, it doesn't prove anything. That's just like any of the other iron butt rides.
Right. That's not really.
You got to go over railroad tracks and take 2 months to do it.
Yeah. You got to abuse your body.
That's
so you
why.
Can't walk.
That's how you get the iron butt, is that having all those days of bouncing over those railroad ties. You know,
you can't. Well, if you do that, we got to make sure we do it with a rigid frame.
If you do it on highways and stuff. That's more like a 10 butt.
Well, that's what I'm going to have. I've got a 10
cushion butt.
50 hours from West Coast to East Coast is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's not bad.
That's not
bad. You're not fooling around.
Yeah, that's not fooling around.
So I think the world record right now is 36 hours coast to coast on a motorcycle.
On a motorcycle.
I think it's 36
hours. I don't know what it is, but it's less. It's in that range. It's somewhere around there.
In a car, it's a lot shorter, but I think on a bike it's around 36 hours. And Phil's looking it up. And after he reports out what it is, we're going to go to break so we can have plenty
probably
of time for racing. So
I saw this one post saying here it's 58 hours. If it's 58 hours, you should be embarrassed.
28 hours, 50 minutes.
Yeah, that's humping. Yeah.
That's humping. That's absolutely that is. Humping. That is. Yeah.
So that's an impressive speed. I will give credit to that guy.
You'd have to have,
I won't say his name so that the cops don't look for him.
And you'd probably need to have you couldn't do it on your own. You'd have to have somebody else, right?
Yeah.
Split the time.
Yeah.
Right?
There's no way you can do it.
28 hours. I can drive 20.
The last
4 or 5. You gotta make sure
because
you start at night.
You're moving at a pretty decent rate in order to accomplish that distance.
120-ish.
That gets tiring, right? After about 2,000 miles. You know,
it's the last 4 hours that are a pain.
Yeah,
that's the last 4 hours.
All right, folks, we're gonna be right back, and you're gonna hear Phil talk about racing, and Ken and I yell at him because he's wrong.
We're back here on the Doghouse on ntnradio.com and a whole bunch of other places that you can find us. If you have any hate mail, please send it to Warren at ntnradio.com. I guarantee you won't check it.
I will appreciate not checking it, too.
He will. He will. We got a lot of racing to talk about, so we won't. We're just going to move on. No. We'll start with Supercross was in Détroit, as I like to call it, the French name for it.
And 12 people got shot in the...
12 people did get shot.
12 people got shot watching the event.
And 14 people got mugged.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, it was a nice, safe event.
Trump supporter punched out one of the officials on the track.
Right. And they did block the road. Mothers Against Violent Sports did block the road to prevent people to go watch Supercross.
There you go.
I made most of that up.
That was very mean of them.
250s, a little bit of a surprise there. Malcolm Stewart won. He's been having his best season to date.
Yes, yeah. He definitely is.
He's podiumed several times lately won this race.
Because you and me kept saying that he's a natural 450 rider, he's going to prove us wrong, right?
I think so. I think the Stewart family hates the Doghouse.
It's part of the rules of the sport. Only one Stewart member is allowed to actually be competitive per season. So.
Oh, all right, well, that could be. And his brother taking the rest of the season off.
Right.
Or at least part of it.
It seems like it anyway.
The rest of his career off.
The rest of his career. Well, what's left of it?
What's left of it?
So, yeah, Malcolm got his win, which is the first time he's won in a while.
I thought it was his first win ever.
No, he won once.
I thought he was only had
no, a, this is his second.
Second win.
What did he win? Was everybody else staying home?
Last year?
Was everybody else staying home?
No, last year.
I think he did win one last year.
He won like round three last year on like a fluke.
Well, okay. Well, then that sort of explains it. Like fluke. So,
well, like fluke, like he had a good race.
I pretty much think that for him to win, everybody else pretty much has to stay home. That's why I was surprised by this.
Yes.
And he not only did he win, he was actually well ahead almost the entire race.
He dominated. He was.
He had a
Well, you have to have a big lead like that so to cover your mistakes. But anyway.
Right, in case he was going to fall again on the last turn.
Or kill the engine.
Then we had 450s, and I watched the race, and I stopped, and I said, oh, hey, Ryan Dungey won because the race was over. And I went on to watch other things, and all of a sudden on my Twitter feed was, Ryan Dungey disqualified, and I, whoa. So I went back and started checking.
And my wife pointed this out to me at the end of the race, and when he pulled up beside his mechanic, you could hear him say, I never saw it. And then the mechanic got on the back of the bike, and they went on. So we didn't know what that was about, because it looked clean to me watching the race.
I missed it when it happened. Ken, tell us how you feel.
Well, okay. Number one, I didn't notice it. I didn't notice it, but when, you know, but they did talk about it in the highlights thing. They went back and they're not, by the way, the Dungey's team's not fighting it at all.
No.
They're not fighting it because it's a black and white rule. And that is when the Red Cross is out, you have to roll the jumps. You can't jump the jumps.
Right.
And he claims he didn't see the guy with the flag. And you know what? There's no rule that says the guy with the flag's got to be waving it at the time. That's not a rule. The flag just has to be displayed. And the yellow lights were on. So that should tell you to be watching what's going on.
Right.
And he admits he kind of made a mistake. And Pro Motocross said that they are going to ask the people to try to be a little bit more visible in there. But the guy that won the race, the exact same thing happened to him.
Well, that's
a few weeks earlier. So I don't feel sorry for anybody, you know.
Yeah, and Dungey, he's been a class act about it. He admitted that he did it. He just didn't see it happen.
It doesn't matter. It's not even a debatable thing. It happened. If you didn't see the flag, that doesn't change the rule.
No.
So
he's accepted it.
Not much he could do about it, and he's in a good position to accept it because Roczen had a miserable, absolutely miserable race.
I think
so.
The guy's still trying to finish the race.
I think you're right. he had a miserable race, and you know, frankly, it doesn't hurt him. Coming in third does not hurt him.
He's still 39 points, almost 40 points.
It doesn't hurt him because he got a gift by Roczen finishing like 16th, right?
Yeah. And then the guy that beat him, Anderson, he had a good race. He ran pretty clean. He picked off Musken towards the very end, got in front of him, and didn't let him get back around.
Yeah, and we should actually mention that. Musken was leading most of the race, and, you know, he just kind of, you know, didn't.
He only led the first. Almost all the first lap.
Oh, I thought
Dungey got around
Dungey
him.
Got around him early.
Oh, he did. That's right. But he was ahead of Anderson, though. I think for most of the race.
For almost all the race. Yeah, his last three laps.
Yeah, that's what I meant. But anyway, it doesn't really. It's almost like it doesn't really matter because the fact of the matter is the only thing that would have made a difference would have been if somehow Roczen would have gotten an advantage out of him finishing in third and moved him up into his second.
That didn't happen.
Didn't happen. So
yeah, and points wise, it didn't really hurt him. You know,
no, it didn't hurt him at all. He extended his lead on Roczen. So.
Right, and Anderson's 53 points back.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Musquin is not even in the same century.
Right, so
he did. He's done all right on that. Then we got Moto.
I was gonna say, I think Anderson moved up a spot, and Musquin moved up two spots from the previous week.
So. Yeah, something like that. Not a huge thing. Right. Then we got Moto GP, the kickoff weekend. Something to be excited about. So excited that you gotta leave before the lights go off.
And this is actually a kind of cool thing. When Zarco jumps, so does a third of the field.
Yes. I mean, they were all Zarco went, I'm keeping up.
Yeah.
You know, everybody had a meeting beforehand. They said, we can't let Zarco get out there by himself.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
because we'll never catch him.
I've never seen so many people jump a start before ever in a race like that. It's literally almost a third of the field jumped it.
And then guys weren't coming in.
And we didn't even know everybody that had jumped it until late in the race. You notice it took them a while to decide on
a
couple people.
There were so many people. They didn't have enough people in the penalty room to assess it.
Yeah, because they're reviewing all the films.
Like, and it looked like they started from the beginning of the field checking the rows, because guys who were like four rows back found out with two laps to go that they were getting a 20-second penalty, and they didn't even know until they came in.
So the outcome of the race is completely meaningless.
Well, it's not really.
Yes,
Folger got out to like a four-minute lead in the first lap,
but
and he didn't even jump.
Yeah,
but you gotta finish. He threw it out in the second lap.
You gotta finish.
Yeah.
You got to finish.
So, you got to stay up.
And that's the race that Folger needs to win, like he did last year, right?
Yeah.
Sam Lowe's looking really, really good on the Calix chassis and everything. I'm gonna join Zarco in a ride through. Okay, that killed all of them. That killed him. That killed Zarco.
How about Morbidelli, who thought he finished second, comes in to find out I got a 20-second penalty. I'm eighth.
The guy
who finished seventh finished 15th.
He didn't get the sign. He didn't get the box sign until four laps left.
Two to three laps left. Yeah, what am I gonna do?
That really
has to be bad time.
That sucks, but do you think there's anything to learn? I didn't learn anything about who's fast. Lowe's seemed fast, like he has been in practice.
Yeah.
Right? And in the offseason. Folger seems fast. Zarco seems like he's having a little bit of speed problems, but you know what? We always say he sandbags until the race, right?
Right.
He never seems to practice really hard.
And sandbagging was the theme of the weekend.
It does appear to be. It does appear to be.
And then I got a lot to say about MotoGP.
I think there's more to say about MotoGP because Moto 2 was
I've been right all along. You can't trust testing.
Oh, I disagree completely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the Hondas have been horrible. Oh, they qualified second.
Yeah.
After they've made some changes.
The Suzuki is really fast. So what is Suzuki now Japanese for sixth place?
Okay, well, first of all, let's just say that Lorenzo has been fast in the entire off season.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I learned something this weekend that I didn't know before. Okay. And I kind of feel bad that I didn't know this.
I'm listening.
But you know, there was all this talk about the unified ECU, right, coming into the season and everything.
Yes.
What I didn't realize is that that ECU is a Magneti, Marcelli Magneti. I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's theirs. What I didn't know was that, unlike Honda's, which is completely homegrown, that Yamaha's was based on that. And so
I didn't know that.
So
either.
Yamaha has right off the bat had an advantage over Honda,
who
basically had to go 180 degrees a different direction, which might explain why Honda's have been having such a problem in the off season and not look good.
And it looked like it during the race as Marquez was up there.
But at the same time, Pedrosa looked like he was still having lots of problems.
But he's standing Pedrosa. Race.
But Pedrosa was really strong at the end of the season last year.
Yes.
And now he's healthy.
Danny Pedrosa has had slow starts to the season for the last 4 or 5 years.
You can't count that because he had the arm pump thing last year.
Well, you would think that would be more towards the end of the season where that affected.
No, because he had the surgery during the season
last year. But I'm just saying, for the last 3 or 4 years, he's been slow to start. I don't look anything into that.
But the arm pump didn't just start last season.
I know that, okay. But I'm just saying he's always slow to start in the season.
Well, people's expectations were he was going to be a good Ken's. No, actually, if you go out there and you read a lot of the stuff out there, a lot of people thought with a healthy Danny Pedrosa, he was going to be more competitive starting. He didn't do bad.
He didn't do bad, but what did he do?
He ended up finishing ahead of a Suzuki.
So Rossi has been bitching the whole offseason about they're building the bike for Lorenzo.
And it kind of looks that way, doesn't it?
And it definitely looks that way, especially when Lorenzo cut him off in practice. Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
Rossi should have kicked him over.
Yeah.
If Rossi should have kicked him over and said, hey, it's practice.
But that would be fitting with the way he's been acting lately.
The problem is Rossi's too focused on this orange color bike, so he didn't even get a chance to think, oh, I got to kick this guy over.
I forgot, I got to kick him over, too.
Yeah, apparently they
got to kick them both over. He's got to kick them both over.
Apparently Rossi and Lorenzo like each other even less than Marquez and Rossi.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Rossi just signed a 2-year deal with...
Yep,
finish his career at Yamaha.
Well, he did that because he's hoping that because of that...
They'll build a bike for him.
Well, they'll build a bike for him because Lorenzo will go to Ducati.
Yeah.
Which I would say he's not going to be able to turn the money away that Ducati's offering.
And Ducati's fast.
On
the straightaways?
Yeah.
I can see Ducati winning at Circuit of Americas. He had the two big straightaways.
Yeah, so. I had to...
Because the last lap, coming into the last lap, right, when Marquez and Rossi kind of caught up with... the Vizioso right by the straightaway, and they were going the slipstream, and like the Vizio just
there was no slipstream. He just took off.
And he almost caught Lorenzo.
I'll tell you what. I mean, you can't predict what would happen, you know, if this didn't happen. But in my opinion, if the bike behind Lorenzo had been had been Crazy Joe instead of DeVicioso,
yeah.
I think the race would have been much closer, and I think he would have had a chance of winning.
Yeah.
He was definitely faster than DeVicioso on that bike until he wrecked. And he,
yeah. You know. Well, you always after said seeing before you wrecked.
That's
yeah.
true. After, we always say that.
After watching the Ducatis run like that, I went back to the final free practice to look at the top speeds of the bikes. The first seven positions for the seven fastest bikes in that round, which is when Honda did its best, were all Ducati. The top seven were Ducatis, with Crazy Joe being first, Dovi being second fastest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the first bike that wasn't a Ducati was a Yamaha.
Yeah, yeah, they were fast. They got if they could learn to stop mm-hmm. and handle and brake. And
yeah,
stuff,
I mean, yeah, it's
they'd be strong.
It's definitely a handling issue that I can see right now. But I will say that is. The thing about the Ducatis in general is, yeah, they're very, very fast in the straightaway, but they do really good on single lap type times, but that's not over the course of a race.
Right.
And over the course of a race, the Yamahas right now, I would have said going into this race, were the strongest, but Mark Marquez, he was fast in the final practice,
and he was sandbagging it all through.
I
sandbag. Apparently, there was a flood in Qatar because there was a lot of sandbags around.
Or what's
that's a good place to have sand.
But what's more likely is, and you have to understand this about testing. In the testing, you're trying all kinds of different things in it, so the times of testing mean nothing.
Well, what's more likely is, hey, we're just going to come out and sucker on the first race. They're not going to think we're fast.
Well, it didn't work for them.
No.
It didn't work for them because third place isn't much of a...
And Vinales didn't have a bad show on that Suzuki holding on to Danny Pedrosa.
Well, the Suzuki lasted the whole race with him riding it
right,
hard.
Right, and that's a win.
That's been, I think it is. And I tell you what, I think Vinales will at least win one race this season.
Wow, that's a bold prediction.
That is.
Yeah, I do. I really believe
that's
that.
That's a crazy bold prediction.
I think on the right track he would have won. And I don't think Qatar is the right track.
Yeah,
but,
wow. That's That is big.
Well, I'm just saying.
Right.
I do think
who wins first, a Ducati or Vinales?
Ducati.
I think Ducati might win next round.
I don't know.
Coda?
I don't know.
Come on, that's going to be built for them.
Well, it's built for straightaway speed, but again, you got to do it lap after lap after lap.
Yeah, but they were every time.
Last year they ran.
Last year
they were doing it. They were running.
Ask Iannone what the issue is. You got to be upright.
Well, his name's Crazy
Joe. When the flag comes out.
They don't call him Crazy Joe for nothing.
Well, that's right. He's very hard. He's very, very aggressive. He's more aggressive than DeVicioso. And that worked for him right up to the point that he didn't have enough traction for his skills. So I think Ducati will win a race too, but I think Vinales will win a race this season. So you heard it here.
I heard that sounds familiar.
That's familiar.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So anyways, but...
Argentina's next.
I really thought that Lorenzo was the right pick for this weekend.
Yeah, he was, so and I still didn't
why
pick
Why didn't I pick it? Because I'm just...
I still have hate.
I'm glad you didn't.
I think both Phil and me just thought that Rossi had a point to make.
I felt that way, and I also... Well, Rossi's been consistently first or second there for a couple years now.
All right, now I'm going to say something about Rossi. You guys know I'm relatively...
You don't like the Italians.
No.
Oh, that's me. Go ahead.
I don't know much about his history because I just got me interested in the sport in the last 2 years. But does he like anyone? I mean, because he gave Lorenzo so much crap before this race started.
Well, Lorenzo cost him the championship last year. And Marquez.
Marquez cost him the
Well, they're buddies. See, the problem
is... Marquez is what cost him the championship, not Lorenzo.
Yeah, Lorenzo was running. I mean,
Lorenzo didn't do anything wrong.
He was complaining about Lorenzo for this year, not last year.
Yeah, well, did you see Lorenzo cut him off in practice?
Yeah.
Damn near killed him?
Yeah.
Well, not that bad. He's alive.
I said damn near.
Well, actually, he didn't even wreck him. So.
No.
Wrecked him.
Damn near killed him.
That's how we end this show.